Welcome to Ask Christian Counseling Associates with your host, Dr. Rich Hoffman, founder and clinical director of Christian Counseling Associates, or CCA. We are the leading faith-based counseling organization. It is our hope that during your listening time, you will receive sound clinical advice, inspiration, and timeless wisdom to face daily challenges. And now, here is your host of Ask Christian Counseling Associates, Dr. Rich Hoffman.
Welcome to Ask Christian Counseling Associates. I am your host, Dr. Rich Hoffman, and today I have David Collins from Christian Counseling Associates, and we are just back from Africa.
Liberia.
Specifically in West Africa, and I have just plenty of things I want to talk with you about there as we literally just got back, about a day ago. But before we start that, David is a guest on the podcast a lot, but tell the folks a little bit about what you do at CCA and anything else that you'd like to offer.
So I'm a clinical supervisor. I oversee a number of interns, pre-licensed folks as they're learning counseling, picking those kind of things up. I also do counseling myself, and I do some of our continuing education projects, and I work into the online presence for that through our digital seminars. So my fingers, can't forget about the Foundation for Christian Counseling. I sit as the secretary on the board for that leg of our venture. And so I have my fingers in a little bit of everything.
Yeah, so David does a lot at CCA. And in a leadership role, that's common, that we were multitasking professionals. And so you're a clinical supervisor overseeing the work of a lot of our counselors who will be in multiple areas, training them, overseeing their work, making sure that not only that we're supporting our counselors, helping them just to be the best that they could be.
Absolutely.
But we're doing that for the people.
Well, that's interesting for supervisor work for me in that it does build relationship with advisees, just like we're building relationships with clients, but it's done in a different way, of course, in a professional capacity. So that's what draws me in and really keeps us, engaged in all this different work, or keeps me, I should say, engaged in all that different work.
It's something we're very passionate about, and one of the things I was thinking of, it upholds a certain standard. That's one of the things I want to talk about and get your just thoughts on it. I guess we could get right into it and talk a little bit about Africa.
Sure.
There's so much that we could mention. I think about just how it is to be in another country, there we can't eat the food.
I was thinking. I mean, that's funny you think about the food, and I was thinking about even landing. So the one thing that always strikes me, I've been there twice now. So when we land. And they're like wheeling the steps up to the airplane because that airport's so small that we don't even actually pull up to the hangar. It just strikes me how different we're going to be in for, because of that. And then, the food comes to mind for you. And I think about just that, everything is so different that it's kind of hard to comprehend sometimes. And being careful, all these, maybe just being cautious in general. Walking down the stairs is the first thing you have to be cautious of. And then you get to the place, you're like, what can I eat? What can I drink? I'm starting to think about that already. I'm trying to remember all those tips that they give us when we're taking off. Don't drink the water, and don't, if it's sitting out, all that food stuff starts.
So I think we both go to a place called Passport Health. And they give us a whole bunch of shots. We always get warnings, but the specific rules, I think, and I can never be sure, because there's a lot of details, but eating something that is a fruit or a vegetable that has been exposed to the open air, because the fruits and vegetables will absorb and drinking the water, or even I think juice that could
Even
have been
well, yeah, the I mean that
exposed.
recommendation to be cautious about all of that, which I never thought of, like you said, until we talked to those folks and got all the shots from them, which felt like a pincushion, by the way. I think at one point I counted, I think it was 8 shots, but at any rate, with the food, the grungies in the air just land on everything once it's cut, and then it mixes with the water. I just never even thought of that until you eat the wrong thing.
So one of my goals to be in Liberia is to be like such a regular there that I'd be able to absorb all of the food and all of it. And so that being said about being careful, I'd want to mention first how much I enjoy Liberia, and I know that you share that. I make it a point every time that I go there to mention to the people that if I get the right view of things, this is like a paradise. There's a we're in this education building on we teach at United Methodist University, so we're both adjunct faculty there.
Right down in the heart of Monrovia with all the hustle and bustle.
Right in the heart of Monrovia, and so Monrovia is 1.5 million people. It's larger than the city of Philadelphia, which in Pennsylvania is the largest city that we'll see. Of course, we have larger cities than that, but nowhere in Pennsylvania do we have a city that's as big as the one that we came from in Liberia, Monrovia. And within these, there's two buildings, and they sit across the street from one another in the city, and that's where the campus is, essentially. And you can walk across the street, and we go up to the third floor, where our office is. And so, in between classes, we'll have conversations and talk with Reverend Dr. Jerry Kula. He's been on the podcast, and so he's our liaison there, our guide. He consults with CCA. But we sit up there on the third floor, and you can look out the window, and from a distance you can see the ocean, and you can see tankers out there, boats, just like you would in the United States, and you can feel the sea breeze, and you can hear the people in the streets, and if you closed your eyes, it would be like you were in a busy resort. The climate, the sunshine. I came back. I was sunburned, the last day.
I think, I mean, that's interesting because I know we talked about that when we were over there, but those massive tankers that are out there, or those big cargo ships, and it has how many ever crates on it, and those the multimodal things that tractor trailers hook up to, and you're watching that kind of tug across the ocean, and we're up on the third floor, and I was like, man, it'd be nice to be on the first floor where it's not so hot, but everything's hot in Liberia.
It's
And
pretty
so
hot.
yeah, and it is. It's like it's almost like a different world, even though obviously it's still on Earth, but it's just so unique. And to be in that atmosphere and like there's this like learning. And then like you said, with all the people out there, it always strikes me because I remember just like noticing how everybody, like when you look down the street and you're looking down that on whatever direction that is, north, let's say, and there's just people everywhere. And they said it's what, 70 some percent unemployment there. And that just struck me that it was people, and that's what they were doing because they didn't have anything else to do. They were just sitting there. They're just kind of conversing, trying to sell something sometimes too. And yeah, you hear the tankers, you're seeing this go by. Everyone wants to, you hear all the chatter, and it's an odd kind of hustle and bustle kind of mixed in that piece at the same time.
So I like to say that I can get a view of paradise from that third floor window. And I say it to the people of Liberia. Liberia has a lot of problems, and we can talk about and coming from America, we could talk about not being able to drink the water or eat the food, certain types of foods, but I would say I love Liberian food.
It was good.
And when we go there, they give us the best of the cuisine, if you will, you know.
Local fish. That was one of my favorites, which they said the name didn't actually translate, but they're like, it's local fish. I'm like, okay, it's good for me. It's
Yeah,
excellent. Excellent
it's
food.
yeah, Caribbean style food, spicy. They have rice and fish and chicken, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, rice was their staple. I remember Jerry telling us that they eat a lot of rice.
And the last day we had fufu, and I don't even know what that is still.
Yeah, they tried to explain it, and I couldn't quite pick up on what fufu
But they
was
gave us, you know, a meal, and they have coastline that are the finest of beaches.
either.
And so you have this dynamic there that, you know, for whatever reason, they could have millions and millions of tourist dollars streaming in there because the place is beautiful
Yeah, it
from
really
one
is.
sense. Now, out the third door, a third floor window of United Methodist University, or what we say UMU, and you can go to the beach, and you know, or you could just be riding around, and you can imagine, like, wow,
Yeah,
you
riding around.
know, what a great place to be. At the same time, it's one of the poorest countries on earth.
Yeah, it's like second or third. I forget. It's up there with the poverty.
And despite, you know, the climate, the potential to be a tourist attraction, and all of the natural resources that the country has, which is more than what you would find in the United States, they find themselves at the bottom. So there's poverty, unemployment, widespread corruption, and people are really in misery. A 20-year civil war that has been ended for 20 years now, but they did not rebuild effectively afterwards.
Yeah, they're still trying to rebuild. I know we talked a lot about that with just the enormity of all of that, where there's you get that sense that something's going on in that hustle and bustle, but then like you get off the beaten track, so to speak, or you know, the one main road, literally one main road, and then it's dirt and hills and you know, potholes the size of the car. And I remember that, you know, a couple of those roads were like practically a you know, a roller coaster ride. They're so bad. And the poverty is just widespread everywhere. And you know, what is it, 7% of the whole country has access to electricity. And for that electricity to not even be available on a regular basis is just so, I mean, boom, it's just like unreal.
They have majority of a rural area that is rich to be farmed, but they struggle to with their food supply, and people literally starve during certain times of the year.
Yeah, the dry season they were talking about, if they don't dig the well right and the well's not properly constructed, that dries up and people starting to dehydrate and you know like die from water shortage. That's just something we have no connection with in the States. It's just so very, very different.
So we're in touch with that when we go, but what a great opportunity is for us to teach there. We're going to officially launch CCA Liberia in about a couple of weeks. So there's a
That's
couple
a good
things
one.
we have to get done, and we're trying to get a phone number.
Just international phone number is actually recognized, which we I yeah, that's been an endeavor for sure.
And all of a sudden,
Contacting.
our phone company that would call us back anytime now is not calling us back. I even tried to reach out to him the other day, but we're waiting on a couple of things, and then we're going to have an announcement for that, our first international location. And say what you will about, you know, the paradise, but the heart of the people there. Reverend Dr. Jerry Kula, Kenneth Jackson,
Yeah, or Team Garma, Doreen, Yah, Emmett up there in
Emmett.
Bonga.
So we have a team of counselors that we just hired, you know, we're excited about that.
Yeah, it is exciting. I'm not obviously a very boisterous person sometimes, but that excites me. Yeah, it's just incredible to see that kind of reach starting to develop. And so many times, how many times do they tell us at least, like, we're a traumatized people. We need this. Like, we need to understand more about it. The war was just incomprehensible. The thing that struck me about that actually in particular is usually when they refer to the war, and I caught it after a number of different times, they were like, it was brutal war. And they usually referred to it as the brutal war or the brutality in the war. It was very rarely just a war or just a civil war. I was like, wow. So like the impact from that is far, far reaching. And how many times did they say like trauma? We're a traumatized people. We know we're a traumatized people. We don't even know where to start sometimes. And for the warm welcome that we get with CCA, and they're like, oh, it's incredible that you want to be here. And it's like, it's incredible you'll have us. And they're so welcoming to us. It's just a rich, wonderful kind of thing that really warms my heart.
Yeah, with those kind of relationships and connections, to do what we do, I believe we could be very successful there and help as many people or more than we do here. And if we ever get that kind of opportunity, we're going to go.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'm all about that. I'm excited about my oversight of that, and it's so gracious to be able to work with CCA and have the opportunity to, to guide some of that or to even begin to understand what the heck we're doing there. It's mind-boggling. It really is that half a world away that they're so welcoming and that they're willing to have us establish that leg. And and as we train those folks and they pick it up and run with it, they're like, you can see that, like almost like that hunger, like they physically like move towards it. And
And every time we get to go there, we get to know each other better. Like Garma and Doreen, I've known now for 3 years, and I can imagine just and Emmett too, certainly Jerry Kula. We meet new people, and we become more travel friendly, travel companions,
Get a
spending
few things
hours and
under our belts.
hours.
Finding our way around the airport now and actually knowing which way to go.
We've
That's,
perfected the Monrovia Airport, which is a place where instantly you get challenged by people who
yeah.
want
Well, that's an
to.
experience there. I don't know. We talked about it a bunch of different times. Just the fact that the ceiling's like super high, but what is it, three quarter of the lights are like half on, half off, and they're like constantly blinking, and it's a completely metal tin kind of roof, and it's that shiny stainless steel, so everything just echoes, and it's just like this cacophony of noise and lights and African accent, and we're always like, what, huh, what, huh, what?
So like when there's strobe lights in the church, they
Oh.
warn you, if you're prone to seizures, don't look at the lights. That's what this environment is like, and it's one of the results of corruption there that another country had come in to build the airport, and they had said to the government of Liberia, "Hey, we're not done yet. We want to test these things out. We'll be 6 more months." And the government said, "No, we're going to open it now."
That's right. They were telling us about the runways too, trying to develop the runway more to make it more conducive to the larger planes, like we were talking about there. And the government was very uncooperative and just put that whole halt to it.
The airport doesn't work right.
Yeah.
The lights don't work, and there's only a couple of airlines that will come in, and they're
Yeah.
threatening to back out.
Yeah.
They could lose all of the airline travel that comes into there, and then you'd have to take a
Man.
plane into a place north of Liberia, which
Oh
is
yeah.
Freeport,
Yeah. We're up
Sierra
at
Leone.
Sierra Leone. Yeah. They were telling us that if that what there was like two airlines left that actually go into it. And then there was some like local, but no international. And if those last two ones pulled out, we'd be traveling when we land from Sierra Leone down by what little highway system they have, which is just.
Yeah, and you have the highway that leads up to the airport that at any time of day, but in certain times of the day, it's backed up with traffic because it's two lanes, and the the roadways there have no lights.
Yeah.
You know, it's very rare to say that they have working lights.
Well, yeah, I don't think I've caught one. I mean, there are a couple of traffic lights in town, but no actual, like, the white road lights.
Yeah. Yeah, so you have cars and trucks. And then you have KKs.
KKs. Which... I love KKs. I'm still on a track to get a KK.
David loves KKs. You can't get them in the United States.
No, you can't.
But they come out of India, which you had found out.
Yeah, I did find out. Yeah.
And they're little buggies.
Yeah. Yeah, that one seat in the front, and it has a single wheel. And then in the back, it has the two wheels. So it's like kind of like a big trike. But it always reminds me almost like the covered wagon. There's that canopy that's canvas, you know, it kind of goes down and over. And then the yellow taxi color all around the bottom. And there's just that single driver up front. And what was that last trip, actually? We got to take a ride in the KK. I remember being up on two wheels at one point around the corner.
Well, it's like a mini trike with cover over it.
Yeah,
and then you have what they call, is it pan-pans or?
Pen-pens. Pen-pens, yeah, because the noise from the motorcycle makes that like pan-pan, and then in their minds it sounded like pen-pen, so that's how it got its name, when they're like pan-pan, and they're zipping down the road. Yeah.
Yeah, so they're zooming in and out of cars and trucks. And the traffic, you know, you'll get you'll be in traffic for an hour each way, 8 p.m. at night.
Yeah.
So we went to visit the bishop of the United Methodist Church, and it added 2 hours onto our trip.
Yeah.
And so you'll be stuck in traffic for hours,
you
know, trying to get somewhere. Yeah. And it's because they had been given money to pave the roads. And that money disappeared.
Yeah.
And so they have half of a project done that it looks like they're working on it.
Yeah.
But you think, you know, the roadways around here and projects get bad in the summertime, this has been years.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, last time we were there, it was still the same thing. It was like that one two-lane section right down the middle. And then on each side of it was, you know, that red kind of clay that they were talking about that they have over there. And it was all just packed flat. And they're like, oh, they're expanding the road. They're going to make it bigger. You know, they'll finally be like ease of traffic from the airport down into the major city, the only major city, you know, Monrovia. And this year they said the same thing. Like, oh, they're working on it. And you could see like the stuff being, you know, torn up. And they had, which when I think of barriers, you know, like we think of do not enter and those big, like, you know, aluminum red and white kind of slashes. Well, there it was like those bamboo sticks that were like painted red and white and just like these handwritten signs that said, you know, turn left or don't enter. And you had to go around and we were just like off road practically. And that was their road project that they were still expanding. And I imagine will be for probably years. It seems like.
Yeah. You have the motorcycles and the mini trikes that are going down into the like off the roads and almost doing jumps over these things while you're on the like sitting in traffic in the highway. And so that's a little bit of what it's like, you know, but to get back to like, you know, one of the things you do well in the supervision of things, you know, I know that you're passionate about that.
Yeah.
And I think the general public sometimes doesn't, you know, they just say like, I want to see my counselor.
Mm.
And they don't realize that in mental health, you know, there's just a whole bunch of things that go on with this industry. We've talked on the podcast about BetterHelp and Talkspace and how this was in the New York Times that they had counselors who were doing counseling sessions from their cars in the passenger seat
while
somebody's sitting beside them, and the client's saying that this is not right.
Mm.
You know, they recognize it. You know, because these smaller places, these companies are profit-driven with no oversight. One company had 5 administrative people for 25,000 employees.
Wow.
Where this stuff was going on. And there's always a need in professions to uphold a certain standard.
Sure, absolutely.
Or it could be dangerous.
Yeah.
So I think of just one of the things that we went through just recently, you know, so, you know, feel free to jump in and tell the story, but, you know, it's very hot. So we just like you sweat.
Constantly. I sweat in the States. It was triple there.
You could tell them they bring us towels so that we could wipe
Yeah, that was
off.
nice. I thought that was a really nice. It was just thoughtful. I mean, I think that's funny you mentioned the towels because that just spoke a little to me, honestly, because they thought enough. We're like, hey, here's a couple Americans that are just poor, and they gave us, they just went out and got towels so they could actually like not be blinded by their own sweat.
Our Liberian team at UMU and everywhere that we go takes care of us,
Yeah, absolutely.
and that's one of the ways that we're sure that we're going to be successful here, where that doesn't happen everywhere. But
No.
they're bringing us water all the time,
Yeah.
concern, so it's very hot. And then at one point, this is what we think happened. We go to this American diner in Liberia,
Oh, yes. The
and
hub. I
week
remember his
two
name.
we've been there for 2 weeks, and love Liberian food, but there's no place like home.
Yeah.
And so I'm all set to get a cheeseburger and a milkshake.
Yeah, vanilla milkshake. I remember because I'm a chocolate fellow, and I was like, Rich is getting vanilla. Like, I would never do
Love
that.
vanilla, love vanilla milkshake. And you got it, was it a frozen cappuccino?
Yeah, it was a frappuccino with an actual Oreo, which I was just like in love with when I saw it, and I couldn't believe that
The
they had
meal
something
was
like that.
beautiful, and now looking back, we forgot about the blender that was blending
Yeah,
ice in the
the
background.
ice. Yes,
You
the
know, you could clearly hear it. Not a question was asked, but that all went in the drinks, and that was Liberian tap water.
Yep, unfiltered.
And so even before I left the restaurant, I sort of felt a little queasy. But by the time I got back to the hotel room,
It was bad news.
I was feeling sick.
Yeah.
And then the next day, I was just trying to concentrate at breakfast, not able to eat. And I was I did my best to get down some tea, and intestinally real sick.
Yeah, bad.
So that was Thursday,
Yeah.
and then we go into Friday,
Right, Gemini.
and we're meeting with Gemini, who is a psychologist and has the only counseling center in Liberia presently. And Gemini Getta is good enough to meet with us, consult with us.
He was so willing to be collaborative and just come alongside us and share information back and forth. Yeah, we're sitting in that meeting. I remember it well. Well, I remember most of it well.
I'll tell my side, and you can tell what it was like for you. But so we're meeting with this gentleman and his colleague, a social worker there. And they're re reviewing everything, and you sort of nudge me and say, "Hey, Rich, I gotta go. I'm not well." And we talked at breakfast that we weren't feeling well, so I just took it to say, like, "Hey, let's wrap this up." I'm saying to Gemini, "Hey, let's end the meeting. Thank you so much." And we're going through, just shaking his hand, and I looked over at you, and you were barely conscious. And you maybe said, like, "Hey, I really, really gotta go." From there, we loaded you into the car, and I could just see in your eyes that something was significantly wrong. I was trying to talk to you, and you weren't really responding to me.
So your support of the foundation helps those in our community who are in crisis to be able to access help that they wouldn't otherwise be able to. So people who are struggling in their marriages, struggling with addiction, depression, anxiety. So your gift supports those who are struggling and meets their need at the right time. Your giving transforms communities one family at a time.
Okay, so for people listening, it might be seeming like, okay, David is just sort of like passing out. But when I was looking at you, I've never seen you like that. To me, just in the middle of nowhere, in a city, I
Yeah,
don't know how
who
to get
knows
you
where we're
help.
at? Yeah.
I was really afraid, like, oh my gosh, you could really be in trouble. I just had no idea like what was going on, because you were in and out of consciousness, and your gaze, I imagine, like, you know, are you having a heart attack or?
I remember, because it was, you know, I was kind of sitting like that, you know, just kind of like bracing myself. But then at one point I felt myself, you know, going lower and lower and lower. And I was just like, almost like there was a magnet between me and I remember that sense of like, what? It's like something's pushing me. And there was this weird kind of like tingle all over my arms from probably losing the oxygen. And then suddenly it was like, hey, we got to go. And, you know, Kenneth and yourself.
Kenneth was with us.
Yeah. I remember it kind of like helping me up. And they're like, can you walk? And I was like, yeah, I can walk. And not nearly that energetic, by the way. It was more
barely
like,
walking. Yeah.
And yeah. You helped me. And I remember sitting in the car, you know, kind of shuffling in a little side kind of thing like that, helped me get up in there. And then that's it. I don't remember much from there until we got to the clinic. I couldn't even tell you how far away it was. I couldn't tell you which direction we went. I can't tell you anything about that trip at all, actually. I just remember at one point you grabbing my shoulder and you were like, David, hey, and Dave. And I was like, oh, and for whatever reason, your hand moved. I remember catching your hand and then looking back up your eyes and still like not really knowing much of anything, still being dazed. And they like helped me into the clinic, and there was this little tiny, it had been from like 1980s wheelchair. I don't even know where they got it from.
It was a small wheelchair. Yeah. And you I was saying to them, he's not even going to fit in there. And they're like, no, put him in the wheelchair. I'm like,
yeah. I'm like,
are
okay.
You serious?
Yeah. So I remember sitting, and then like, I had to do like this little shimmy to even get into the wheelchair, and they wheeled me out up in there. And I remember that. I remember pushing and, you know, like, obviously I'm a big guy. So, you know, there's like three guys heaving me up the ramp and push.
Barely got you up
yeah,
the ramp.
Barely yeah. got me up there. And when we say clinic, we should say two rooms, the front room and the back room. And, you know, just all the stone and dust and dirt and everything in that first room. And I remember going through there, and then there were six beds. And funny enough, it looked very much like Army hospital beds, just mm-hmm. steel bars at the bottom, some little camp kind of mattress and barely a pillow. And they're like, here, take your, you know, you like, I'm like, okay. And they're like, yeah, lay down. I'm like, okay. And so I laid down there, and I was still like half in, half out. I wasn't really actually like super aware. I remember them asking me some questions, my age and something else. And then at one point, all of a sudden, like, it was just like clear. And I was like, oh, hey, Rich. And yeah. I was back. And
yeah, probably the most disturbing part of that, you know, when anybody's in trouble, like your face was gray. But then there was a part where everything returned to normal. And, you know, I kept this, you know, I'll give this to you today. This is the Ahmadiyya Muslim Clinic. And that's where we went.
Wow. Cool.
And, you know, Kenneth, you know, at some point turned to me in the car and said, should we take him to the hospital? I'm like, yes, let's go. and we got there, and you know, there's things about everywhere that you go, and one of them is like poor lighting. You know, there's a lot of sand on the floor.
Yeah.
And it's really nothing like you see in the States.
Yeah,
you know, but it was like an old Army hospital, maybe, is what I would say, you know, from 1940.
Yeah.
That's what it looked like.
Yeah, it was a community room. It was just, there was no single room. Yeah. It was like a ward. Yeah.
Yeah. And they came in. And there was a nurse there, and just being half the world away, I'm like, oh my gosh, is this gonna be right? You know, and the nurses came in and put an IV in you.
Yeah.
They took your blood pressure. And all of a sudden I started to notice that, as far as I know, they were following all the standards.
Yeah.
They had
an exact protocol. Yeah.
The medical profession was operating the way it was designed, the way it was standardized to be.
Yeah.
And that somebody was, and kind of told us before we go in here, this is the international clinic. This is where you go.
This is where that's right. I remember that.
And I'm afraid, because of all what's going on, I doubted it. until I started to see those things. And you know, just on your behalf, and you do the same for me. You know, I'm watching everything very closely. Mm-hmm. Because if it wasn't right, I was going to stop it.
Right.
You know, but...
Yeah, I remember you asking me, like, is that okay? They're going to put an IV in you. I was like, yeah, it's fine. I need the fluids, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, but...
Appreciate that. Watching out. You know, I do remember watching out for me.
Yeah, you know, and ultimately, they tell us that you were dehydrated.
Yeah, extremely dehydrated.
And they put an IV in you. They checked for the heart. They did an EKG. Mm-hmm. They took your blood pressure.
Yeah.
They did a blood test.
Well, the thing about that EKG, too, it wasn't even like, you know, we do the couple of patches or how many ever, and there are those big white stickers. I remember they had like clips. They remind me of potato chip bag clips.
They were like that, though.
Yeah, they put a clip on each wrist. They put a clip on each ankle. And I'm like, wait, they said they were going to do an EKG. Like, what is this? But it was that old of technology. I mean, it functioned, and then it's like, just like only in movies I've ever seen, they wait a couple of seconds, they tell me to be quiet, don't talk, and then it spits out the paper, and it's like, and all the paper, and there's the EKG printed out, and I was like, whoa, my goodness, like,
yeah,
that's incredible.
Yeah, so like within a span of 30 minutes, the color returned to your face, you were stable, and you know, within another hour, we were walking out of there.
Yeah.
And I was thankful to God, you know, that he brought us to a place that had standards.
Yeah. You know, you and me both.
You know, and that is, you know, that's what we do here.
Yeah.
You know, that mental health has to have standards too.
Yeah.
You know, we're a faith-based mental health organization that guarantees that the standard is going to be delivered to people. Yeah. And what we see here in the field, especially where there's no oversight, that may happen or it may not.
Yeah, you don't know. Yeah. I mean, started us down this path, that whole question of supervision, that really does draw me into supervision, being able to sit with somebody and say like, hey, there is a standard of care that we need for people. Like people need from us as the professional, people need from us as a caring person, and that to have a standard is right and true, and to be able to establish that in the States. And then I get the sense, even as we're talking, we're starting to have something of that in Liberia.
We're going to do it everywhere we go. Just like, you know, in Liberia, they have the same medical standard that we have here. And what a blessing, you know. So to me, that's why we're passionate about supervision.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, we're going to make sure that this is Christian.
Absolutely.
You know, that it follows the traditional teachings of the church, and that clinically it upholds a standard where you're going to get assessment and treatment that should happen across the world, but it's not guaranteed.
Yeah,
somebody has to manage that.
Yeah, and I remember, you know, just speaking to that point specifically with the class that we were teaching, like counseling is not advice. You know, part of supervision is recognizing when my advisees get into advice giving, and for that to translate across there, because that, I mean, it was just, maybe it's common to humanity, I suppose. We want to give advice, or we want to help people out in that way. And, you know, the Liberian folks were like, it's not advice. And we're like, no, it's not advice. And like generating that standard, helping to train them in a standard that is professional and Christian and functioning in such a way that actually produces true change is, that's amazing stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, we do that training here and it's needed.
Yeah.
And we can do that now internationally. We did it on the ground, you know, spending 2 weeks in Liberia. But we also have a seminar platform that we're offering to the public, but also offering to educational institutions, where we put high quality content, training content for clinical counselors.
Yeah, that's an exciting opportunity to have the digital presence, which, you know, is as we talked many a times when we were over there too, that the world is getting smaller in connection sense.
Yeah.
Because, you know, establishing the internet to have you know, the CCA seminars that we're developing and going to be able to put out there. And not only is that going to be, you know, like open for, say, counselors and Christian counselors and really just anybody that wants to get into those things, but, you know, there's going to be specific things that are geared towards a cultural difference for the Liberians to help them learn and to have that access and, you know, to have that avenue and mode is, that's, yeah, I mean, I'm still kind of wrapping my brain.
It's truly multicultural, yeah. But it, at the same time, you know, we are going to have a live component that will deliver over the internet. Mm-hmm. So live classroom with also on-demand content that'll be excellent training. And we're launching, you know, the same kind of mental health network operation that we do in the States, overseeing it in the same way. Mm-hmm. And you're going to be leading that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So, you know, those are the kinds of opportunities that we're getting at CCA, you know. So all of that is happening, and you know, people ask, you know, well, what are you doing there? Like, what is that going to do? And what I would share is just the value that when there's a renewal of God's people, this leads to a revival of the land. So let me say this again. A renewal of God's people leads to a revival in the land. Yeah. And that's, you know, what we're training people to do is to see into the heart struggle. And that together we'll seek renewal.
Yeah.
And that will transform communities.
Well, isn't that the passion of Christianity in general, you know, seeking renewal? And to be able to connect it with the true sense that there's this change in the renewing of the spirit. You know, we can't leave out there's a renewing of your mind, there's a renewing of emotions, and like this total person that can be, you know, suddenly regenerated in such a way that only Christ can do, you know, in the moment of regeneration there in our heart level. And then to be a part of that in, you know, clinical psychology and all the works that we're doing, and to be able to structure that, it's just like, I just see so many threads that link together and tie together and put that, you know, in God's hand. And then, you know, when we get a sense of that and we follow it through the work in Liberia, through the work in the States, you know, like suddenly, like, it's like, oh my goodness, I can see God's hand in this world in a really genuine way. And what better place to be?
Yeah. And we're prepared to do that anywhere. But that's the opportunity we're going to get in Liberia.
Yeah.
And that there's a lot of down, you know, a lot of hurting people there. And so we were talking about one of the things I talked about a lot in Liberia was this country song.
Oh, yeah, country music.
And David's heard a lot about this because I actually preached on it in a couple of churches. But there's this old country rock song called Angel from Montgomery. And the song talks about this person who is older and they're looking back on their lives. And the song goes, if dreams were thunder and lightning was desire, this old house would have burned down a long time ago. Make me an angel that flies from Montgomery. Make me a poster of an old rodeo. And just give me one thing that I can hold on to believe in this living is just a hard way to go. And so we talked about this country song, and we told them about American country songs. You know, that has this formula of, you know, it has to say something about your mom, a train station, a truck, being in jail,
losing your dog.
You know, so it could be very depressing, you know, but we love country music because it talks about things of the heart. And so this song is talking about if what was in my heart could get out, it would burn the place down like lightning and thunder, but it never got out. And I wish I could be an angel that flies away. And there's this reference in a song that you really have to study it to look into, but it talks about a poster of a rodeo in Montgomery, Alabama, where the bull rider rides this bull that is sure to kill you.
Yeah, which I remember you finding on the internet and came to find out it was like a semi-famous poster that really spoke to that era of the high rodeo, if there is such a thing, but it was really popular.
Yeah, so we're in the churches describing why in America we watch rodeos.
Mm.
And, you know, I'm speaking about this from Western PA. So, you know, but to me, for that 8 seconds that you're trying to stay on that bull, you know, that you get got thrown off and die, you're the most free.
Uh-huh.
And people watch that and imagine being that free and that, you know, that powerful,
mm,
you know, yeah, up on a bull and yeah, getting it right.
Yeah.
That is the height of living.
Uh-huh.
And that's the kind of freedom that we have here.
Yeah. And boy, that connection I recognized was universal because they really understood that. They understood the passion for change, the passion to move towards something, that sense of freedom that they really like true freedom. You know, they obviously they have a free society there in many ways, but to be free at the heart level.
Yeah, we speak about the heart of the Liberian people. Yeah. And my experience from them is from the United Methodist Church, that they have been missionaries to the United States for many years, mm-hmm, even as we're being missionaries to Africa. Mm-hmm. And so I tell them this true story of being in Portland, Oregon, I think it was 2016, and the African delegation, they, in full view of these real official church people, mm-hmm, you know, who are very liberal and very corrupt,
mm-hmm,
they danced an African dance that was designed and meant to keep away demons.
Hmm.
And they said in full view that the American church wants to take the baby Jesus and destroy him, just like Herod wanted to destroy the baby Jesus, wow, when he was born.
Wow. Yeah.
And that Jesus and the Holy Family fled to Egypt.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Which is Africa.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And he says, you know, you want the baby Jesus, you cannot have him. We will take him again until it's time for him to return.
Wow.
And, you know, the hair on the back of your neck stood up, you know, in what they were speaking from the heart, that they would protect the faith.
Yeah.
And glorify God that way.
Mm.
And the people, the corrupt people back sneered at them.
Mm.
You know, they didn't care.
Yeah.
You know, and it was such a, like a spiritual heartfelt moment where you could clearly see what was right, and that they were the only people who would do it.
Mm.
You know, and that day they led.
Yeah.
And I tell the people, you know, and so I told the church, you know, that day you were like angels.
Mm.
You know, so we talked about the song and the heart in that way.
Yeah.
I loved the people of Liberia.
I mean that's the sense that I get too, like that passion and the strength of their faith to say, you know, like, no, there are things or standards we're going to uphold in the faith. We're not going to stand for these liberal things that are destroying the church. And they recognize, even though, you know, they're somewhat disconnected, of course, being across the ocean, but they recognize that there's a standard there that they were going to uphold, that they want to uphold. And the folks that were involved with, in that sense that they have to like acknowledge and move with the Spirit, the Holy Spirit, and recognizing that there's like this both and sense in following the Spirit, doing things that are right and true, and that it's not just theological, it's not just doing, but they're really struggling towards actually living out their Christianity and pushing into that.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're like, I could think, even as we talk, that, you know, like they're leading us in some way of like faith and strength of commitment towards, you know, Christly principles.
Well, it's just in the United Methodist Church, at least, you know, and there's going to be the split between what will be the Progressive Methodist Church and the Global Methodist Church.
Yeah.
And for the folks out there, we're going to be with the Global Methodist Church, and so will the Africans.
Yeah.
And they've been leading the way the whole time. And for that, you know, they've come over here and been missionaries. And so if we love Liberia, they've loved us all along,
mm-hmm,
you know, to do that for us. And so we got into this thing with them where they said, hey, we want you to come over here and do this. And even though it might seem like, okay, we're going to go half the world away, 23-hour flight, and put resources in Liberia, for what they've done here, it seems like a very small thing to do in return.
Yeah, It's such a joining with something true and right, and to help to support them in so many different ways. You know, the need is great in so many regards, but, you know, to be able to have that connection and work towards something together, it's just unreal.
And to be able to establish something like that there for somebody who would need it, you know, and I think that that's probably one of the reasons, you know, to see this in a spiritual way, like, why did you get dehydrated? And why was on the other side of that completely helpless, you know, but thank God we went to a place and they had established something with standards there that could get you back on your feet, because who knows what would have happened.
No telling.
And you know, if there's not an available mental health resource that... Oh, what happened to your mic there?
It's moving on its own.
We just got these new mic stands, folks, and
they're doing their own thing.
They're working. Yeah, they're doing their own thing. You know, who knows what will happen? You know, when somebody who is depressed there or traumatized, you know, what happens when they're in need and they can't find that place?
Yeah.
You know, and I think we take it for granted here. You know, what happens when somebody goes to somewhere and it's not held to a standard, or it's not available.
Which reminds me of the corruption that they were talking about, you know, because the corruption at the highest levels in Liberia are restricting that building of something.
It's tough.
And you know, to join with them that were able to build something, even start building something, that's like a whole different level. And, you know, and they have, you know, like just thinking about that whole sense, they have the sense that we're not against people. Like, they're not against us. We're not against the human. They recognize there's principalities of the air. And that we really are in a spiritual war, in a spiritual battle. And they have such grace for the person sitting across from them, but yet they have their mind towards those Christly things. And to have that, you know, to what if, like, we weren't there, and like you said, there's no place to go. What then? I can't even imagine a place.
Yeah, we say that we want to see communities transformed one family at a time. It's the slow change that... You know, God changes a heart, that changes a marriage, that changes a family, that changes a church, that changes a community. And these things get established where now things are free and that people can thrive.
You know, that true sense of freedom, too, if I could say that. The freedom in Christ is far different than this mistaken idea. And nothing against America. I love America. But we have this mistaken sense of freedom here means I get to do anything I want.
Right.
But they have a sense of true Christly freedom, and to be able to walk in something that's designed with standards. We know God's standard is the ultimate standard. And to be after that kind of standard and experience true freedom through being after his heart is a whole different world.
So you're defining something there that hardly gets talked about in America, but it's core to real freedom, which is it's not a license to follow our desires. It is the opportunity to do what is right that is sensed deep in the heart. And there's struggle that in any moment we have competing things happening deep down inside, that God is calling us to do what is right according to his design, where he's calling us, and we struggle to resist our desire to do what we want.
And especially here in the States, with all the messages about all the desires we quote unquote should have, and the internal and external struggle.
So in that sense, you know, if we can only make these choices, which God enables, without God, it's not possible. You know, but we have choices, and to make those, you know, that could change everything. In Liberia, in wherever you are, and I believe in America, you know, that, you know, there were courageous people in the heart, you know, that followed God a long time ago, and established this, and we still benefit from it hundreds of years later. And whether we did anything or not, you know, we still benefit from that miracle happening here. You know, so that could happen in Liberia.
Absolutely. Well, it's good to know. try that again. Good to know about those things. And, you know, which makes me think of my kids, funny enough. So my kids are homeschooled. And, you know, I'm sitting there and I'm learning stuff as they're learning stuff because my wife is just amazing with the way she leads and teaches them. And, you know, she's talking about history and all those things that, you know, have established this nation. And that there were, even though, okay, we can debate about, you know, the actual Christianity, some of the founding fathers, I'm sure, you know, but rather than get into all that, the sense that they did have an understanding of a biblical standard and a truth that they established. And then I see my kids learning about that, my two daughters, and, you know, like their boldness to be able to stand for that. And they're like, no, they're beginning to understand that true sense of freedom in Christ and what it is to have good theology and good practice and not just, you know, do anything you want, like we're talking about. That's not healthy. And they come home with stuff because they're involved a little bit in the local school because, you know, we have that privilege. And, you know, they come back and like, Dad, guess what they're talking about? And I'm like, whoa, you know, and they're trying to do and trying to say like anything. And here my kid, you know, my children, 13 and 15, are standing up for biblical truth and saying, no, this is right. You know, here's a standard and, you know, we should live by it. And they're doing that in such a caring way and a loving way. And it goes to talking about that. And it just reminds me of that standard. Like it is right and true to have a standard, a biblical standard to me after God's things and not just our own. But there's that continual war, like you're noting, that we have. And, you know, the Liberians, I think, are beginning to get that sense, too, because they're very well aware of how corrupt their government is. Mm-hmm. And so they're like, okay, well, what about real freedom and how do we live into that? And what do we do to, you know, and we have that great privilege as, you know, we get into the counseling there to help people think about those things in a real way.
Yeah. So that brings us to talking about, you know, some of the struggles that are common, depression, trauma, and we have different ways of thinking about, okay, why is this happening to us?
Right.
You know, that was one of the themes of, you know, what happened to my country? What happened to my church? What happened to my life? And, you know, so I have a couple of articles I want to run by you that talk about this.
Christian Counseling Associates is ready to serve you, providing a wide range of counseling services. Christian counseling is accessible to everyone. We serve both Christians who want their faith integrated into the counseling process or those holding any beliefs or attitudes toward spirituality. With many years of counseling experience, our counselors are professional, licensed, highly trained, and rooted in their commitment to their church and communities. CCA is able to provide a full range of clinical counseling services. For more information, visit our website at www.ccawpa.com.
Okay, David, I'm going to break into these articles and let's just get clinical for a little bit.
Sure.
Share with the folks your clinical expertise. Wanting to see what you think about all this. So there's this thing, and it's not really you know, any kind of professional standard, but they call it Blue Monday. There was this article in the news that talked about the most depressing day of the year, Blue Monday, and that is technically, according to you know, whoever made this up, January 24th.
Okay, so just
is the height, and so the concept is that all this thing comes together with it's a mixture of factors such as debt level following Christmas time, the shortest day of the year, people by this time failing in their New Year's resolutions, and generally just losing all motivation. And it's been, you know, just so you're clear, this has been criticized by professional organizations as being bunk. you know, but it definitely is an interesting concept as far as getting attention.
It is. I immediately think of SAD, seasonal affective disorder. And, you know, we all know that certainly has a play into things with lack of sun. Like, you know, Pennsylvania, we like to say in my household, gray o'clock. because it is always gray in Western PA.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I suppose I could see some of that affect, seasonal affective disorder. This is interesting, though. I'd be curious how they pinpointed it to one day. Like, what's the
It's just
structure?
like the height of it. This is the most it's going to be is on this day.
Interesting.
And that would probably be where I become a skeptic, but
A little bit. Yeah, I'm a little skeptical, I have to say. Like my professional opinion around that might be a little bit commercialized in that respect. I think about the flip side of a lot of stuff too, though. If the shortest day of the year is also a good thing, and because now the days are only getting longer, and there's only going to be more sunlight. So I suppose it depends on how you look at it.
Okay, so let me pile on some more here. This is coming out of a business journal titled "Your Coworkers Are Less Ambitious. Bosses Adjust to the New Order." And this is saying, recent article, the passion that we used to see in work is lower now, and you find it in fewer people, at least in the last 2 years. They're noticing that people don't want to go into work. They don't want to work overtime, and we're starting to talk about we don't even want to work a 5 day week. That's too much,
Interesting.
and that the last 2 years has changed our view on that. It wasn't the same before COVID. What do you think?
That's funny. I immediately think of the guy we ran into in the airport. He was from Brussels, who was advocating for a 4 day work week. He's like,
We
why
talked to
not?
that
Well,
guy.
yeah, why not just stay home? And I suppose, like if I, of course I could do a little more research into that and look into it, but I would suppose I think of this natural tendency to think of work as bad. I don't necessarily know that work is always bad. I mean, certainly work takes effort. And so, like if we're honest, humans don't really want to give a lot of effort at various times in our day or, our year or whenever. So that makes sense to me. To not, but to, I think your co that coworker thing is the sense that somehow I'm different from somebody else. And if I'm different from them, they're the ones that don't want to work. I'm kind of fine. And so, like it's kind of that I think in the mental health we recognize that our reality is our reality for us, but it's not necessarily truly reality. And so, like, how do you establish like what is real and what isn't real? And if you or I or anyone starts defining reality for themselves, then what 7 point some billion people in the world, then there's 7 point some billion realities.
So this reality that I'm working too hard, and this they derived this from a survey. It says in November of 2022, 3,000 workers and managers were surveyed by Qualtrics. 36% said their overall career ambitions had waned over the past 3 years, compared with 22% who said their ambition had increased. Nearly 40% said work had become less important to them in the past 3 years.
Well,
So.
I wonder if there's some effect there from COVID, recognizing, like that kind of whole sense that you get when you get close to something and you don't die or you don't get, and you're like, wow, I'm really thankful for a lot more suddenly because it could have been so much worse. So I wonder if there's some of that coming into play, maybe. I mean, that's just kind of a hunch of mine. Of course, I don't have any hard data for that.
Okay, well, here's the next one. Gallup poll. And you know that
Oh yeah,
this is the
Gallup.
most, Gallup is considered probably the most accurate survey research that's out there. But these are what we'll refer to as qualitative, or I'm sorry, descriptive research.
Got to get those
I almost got that wrong.
right.
And so it just allows us to ask questions. It's describing things. And what this is saying is that on the domestic front, 90% of Americans expect 2023 will be the year of political conflict in the US. 72% think that crime rate will rise. 56% predict that there will be many strikes by labor unions. Just in general, about 8 in 10 foresee economic struggles, higher taxes, budget deficits, 90% expect that the political scene will be bad. 85% predict that the world political conflict will rise and be bad. Yeah. An overall pessimistic outview.
Yeah, very outlook. Wow. Yeah, very negative. Yeah.
So we're starting to put together this. You have last week, Blue Monday, possibly, if you believe in that. You have people who are looking towards work, which you know, we spend a lot of our day during the week doing, saying, man, I don't know if I want to do this anymore, you know, according to some surveys. And then Gallup comes through with this poll, say, we've just surveyed everybody, and looking into the future, they're saying, wow, it's going to be bad.
It's rough. That's rough.
And so is there a possibility that we struggle with discouragement lately? You know, and and that is, you know, I would say just in what I've been watching, I think it's pretty accurate.
Yeah. Well, I wonder. You know, I remember reading in some articles, and that for the first time in our history as a nation, Christianity is actually on the decline rather than the increase. And I wonder if there's some correlation there in that. When people don't have anything real to hope in, or don't really see anything real, or maybe I should say more specifically, someone to believe in that is actually the same yesterday, today, and forever, as in, you know, God and Christ, that, yeah, that makes sense. Why hope? I mean, I can't fathom hope without Christ. And if the large portion of the world in our U.S. society does not have a belief in who is, then it seems to me pessimistic.
So Harold Koenig is a Christian psychiatrist, but he has brought that all together, meta-analysis of research. What is it? Religion and Health is the name of the text.
Oh, yeah.
They're famous among the community, but he brings thousands of studies together that shows that Christians, statistically on average, are more hopeful, more psychologically healthy. If they struggle with depression, trauma, anxiety, addiction, whatever, they struggle less. I even want to say statistically that they physically, you know, like, heart health,
biological health in general,
significantly better.
Wow.
And so, you know, of course we have a bias. Okay. This is, we're Christian counselors.
Sure.
You know, we, you know, on the foundation of faith, we're saying, you know, our hope is on the foundation of Jesus Christ. And for that, we can look forward into the future more effectively. And so you're talking about this trend, but as our connection to that, you know, in the faith community, we become disconnected. We're slipping a little bit.
Yeah. It starts to thin. I forget the exact chapter in Psalms, but I remember a Psalm where as for me, my feet almost slipped. Basically, I began to doubt the Lord. And the psalmist is talking about how, you know, in those times that we don't understand what's going on and we don't know which way to turn. He even refers to himself at one point in the Psalm as a brute beast. And it's such a description of what it is to be mindless in the state of depression. And, it, you know, as you read through the psalm, it's like 73, 72, one of those psalms right around there. As you get to the end, he says, but as for me, I recognize that I need to keep the commandments of the Lord, that I need to uphold his principles, basically.
Yeah.
And it, you can do, you know, in the text, you can read that. And I think about science and faith aren't necessarily contradictory and actually don't have to be. And for a good portion of life, really aren't necessarily contradictory. And, you know, like you say, that biologically speaking, back in the laws of Leviticus, you know, wash your hands. Well, it was upheld, but we all know that there's a lot of science behind washing your hands. So like you say, though, the more we come disconnected. And, you know, it's not to say we don't need to know why, like us humans like to know why, but if you connect to the designer rather than just the design, you begin to have a lot more hope and trust and all these things, even though the world is going to pot, as they say.
Yeah. And so Gallup is telling us that, that Americans look at it that way. And, we come back from Liberia, and I just have to be honest, you know, I look at this as the land of opportunity. You know, the freedom that we have, and everything that that means, I really am just encouraged to be here.
Yeah.
You know, and I loved our time in Africa, but, you know, one more thing I'd throw out is you think about the people of Liberia and the opportunity of what we can repay to them for everything that they've added to us, that we've described here as we talk, that Liberia ranks 159 out of 162 ranked countries in economic freedom. Wow. Now, this is a, let me describe this to you and see what you think. This is from the Heritage Foundation. They have an index. So you can say, based on GDP, you know, where does a country rank in wealth or GDP per capita? And, you know, we're not economic experts, so maybe not get into that. But, you know, economic freedom is about individual autonomy, concerned chiefly with the freedom of choice enjoyed by individuals in acquiring and using economic goods and resources. The underlying assumption of those who favor economic freedom is that individuals know their needs and desires best, and that a self-directed life guided by one's own philosophies and priorities rather than those of a government or technocratic elite is the foundation of a fulfilling existence. Now, that's a lot, but but it says that in a place where you're allowed to be self-directed, which means at the heart you choose. And that's what capitalism is. You know, that if a business is good, the public decides. If it's not, it fails. Because the public decides that it's not. They have the freedom to choose. And they have the freedom to say what they want to do, where they want to work, where they want to go, and they can follow that in their heart. And there's flourishing when that happens. And then there's places around the world where they're fighting for that. And in Liberia, the government and the system that they've created, and we've talked about airports and roads, and we can continue to talk about just everywhere you turn, like internet, delivery systems.
Even getting a visa, they were saying, trying to get out of the country, oftentimes gets denied.
You have to get a car shipped to you, and they, they slap it. Thousands of dollars of tax on there, and just discouragement after discouragement, you know, because they're not economically free. And then we come back here, and you know, in 14 years, you know, and we believe that that happens through God's blessing, you know, but there's nothing to interfere in that.
Certainly is ease here. And you know, that is striking, because if there's one thing, like the amount of effort that Liberians put forth just to live day to day. And if we, you know, if we had to put forth that same kind of effort, but that access that's available to us, and to, you know, like, I feel really strongly even coming back there that, wow, there's this access granted to us as Americans, as Christians, and that in the Christianity to use that well, to be good stewards, you know, to live to that higher calling, to the true freedom.
Yeah, so you know, in 14 years, CCA expands into four states. We realize one of our core purposes is to build regional level faith-based mental health networks. And then we get this opportunity to go to Liberia, and we can go. We can do it, you know, and they're asking, you know, for us to do that, and they don't have that kind of freedom there. Not yet. You know, but if we can only be free to go where God is calling us, you know, we can have joy and blessing and hope. And that's what we want to collaborate with in Liberia to see that day come about. And we learn things every time. And so, you know, the last thing I would share that we saw, they took us to the very hilltop of the coast.
Right.
You can see from all around.
That giant hotel.
Is the place, I think it's called.
I think that was it.
And there was a monument up there to the first president.
J.J. Roberts.
J.J. Roberts. And J.J. Roberts, he was a wealthy American who migrated to Liberia was free, and he inherited all of this land. And then when he passed away, he willed it to the Methodist Church. And because of the corruption, because of the lack of freedom there, all of that land, which is tens of thousands of acres of land on the coast, on the beach, sits undeveloped.
It's just sitting there and just
and let me say to the world, because of the corruption of the United Methodist Church, has been left undeveloped for the church. And they are willing to collaborate with us to develop that. But they need partnership from the church to do it. And you know, we've connected with a network that is ready to go.
They're eager and ready.
And I believe that we can take what we have here that sometimes we take for granted and connect it with that and increase their level of freedom to follow God. This group, you know, I don't know all the history, but I just know when I see it that they have the heart of faith.
They do.
That they will do it.
It's incredible faith.
And it will be legend. They'll be like angels. And just the opportunity to go there and see that and work with the people. You know, we say we go to Liberia because that's where Jesus is. I appreciate you coming in for the podcast today. And sharing this mission.
It's a great privilege, not just to be here, but to share in a mission that I really believe, and I know you, both of us have that sense that, you know, Christ is there and he is doing something, and it's part of our job to follow what he's doing, not just, you know, corrupt ourselves either. So
And I think, you know, we need a lot of people to support this. And there are a lot of people who already do. But I could genuinely say I get the sense that you love this mission better than I do. And that's a great blessing to me.
Thank you. That's
so
very kind.
So, you know, we talked a lot about what the people of Liberia are up against, and they're discouraged. And we talked about the most discouraging day of the year here. You know, maybe we would end today and to say a prayer for those who are listening who are discouraged and hurting and searching for something in their lives to hold on to. Would you pray?
Absolutely. Heavenly Father, in your precious name, Lord Jesus, for all of us, not just those folks that are listening who might be deluded in the moment or not quite sure where you're going, I pray, Holy Spirit, indeed, as only you can, reveal yourself, show yourself true to those folks that need just a little something more of who you are. And through your blessing, Lord Jesus, be after our hearts to find more of who you are in this world who needs you so desperately. And I ask again in your precious name for your grace and mercy, Lord Jesus. Amen.
Amen. Amen. David Collins, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you to the people of Liberia and to the audience. We'll see you next time. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Ask Christian Counseling Associates. We hope that you have been blessed by today's presentation. Please visit the Christian Counseling Associates website, where you can comment on today's podcast, sign up for the weekly article, connect with our social media, or even schedule an appointment at one of our nearby locations. We also provide online counseling for those not in our immediate area. Thanks again for listening. May God bless you and keep you well along life's journey.